The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. Yeah, good. We didn't have a chance yesterday to talk about the fact that President Ruvi Rivlin celebrated his 80th birthday the day before yesterday. And I think that that's quite a fantastic achievement for a president in office. But let's not forget that Israeli presidents apparently have this longevity gene, because former president Shimon Peres celebrated his 90th birthday while in office. So that was quite an achievement.
Absolutely. How was that? You were there, weren't you? You were at the...
I was at the 90th birthday.
You were there? Indeed, I remember.
Together with Barbara Streisand and Bill Clinton and Tony Blair.
I'm hoping they didn't ask you to sing, though.
Oh, no. Barbara said, look, I'm not doing so well. Won't you please
stand in for me?
Take me a favor. I said, Babs, will you anything?
Absolutely. So, yeah, we did want to mention that, and it is a great one indeed. All right, lots to talk about, because I found yesterday's news coming out of Israel just a little confusing. Let's start off with the fact that the IDF responded to rocket fire from Gaza last night by attacking targets overnight. Prime Minister Netanyahu had to be rushed off stage at a campaign event in Ashdod. Red sirens sounded. It sounded like a little bit of a mess. What happened?
Well, yeah, the question is how much of it was really pre-coordinated or not. We know that the IDF have been in action overnight. They attacked 15 terror targets in Gaza in response to the rocket fire at around 9 o'clock last night. Sirens went off in Ashdod and Ashkelon. Two rockets were fired from Gaza towards Israel. The Iron Dome intercepted one, while another one fell in an open field near Ashkelon. There were no injuries. There was no damage caused. So fortunately, that went that was very fortunate indeed that there was nothing to report about where those rockets fell. But of course, the red sirens were sounding while Prime Minister Netanyahu was on stage at this campaign event in Ashdod. He was ushered off stage. He encouraged everybody at the event, mostly Likud supporters, to leave in an orderly fashion and to take positions in their protective areas that were around the location. And he was able to then continue with his event 20 minutes later after everybody had returned from their protective shelters and the all-clear siren, the all-clear signal was given that everything was okay. Of course, it gave a photo opportunity for the Prime Minister to be seen having to endure the rocket fire that so many of the residents of southern Israel have had to endure, over the past years. And one wonders to what extent it may or may not help his campaign, because one of the accusations that he does have to take from time to time is the fact that he's not doing enough to secure the security of southern residents. That is certainly one of the problems that he's having to face. Having said that, it is quite ironic that residents of southern Israel are very supportive of Prime Minister Netanyahu, and they seem to be ready to come out in full force next week in the election to vote for him again, in spite of the fact that he has to take this accusation that he's not doing enough to protect them. But be that as it may, we understand that the IDF were in action last night. They attacked a number of terror targets around Gaza. Apparently there was an underground tunnel that was found, and that was attacked, amongst other things, naval facilities were under the control of Hamas. We understand that the Egyptians were very, very concerned and were calling Hamas representatives last night to find out who would have been responsible for firing these rockets towards Israel. And the Egyptians were saying to Hamas that if this rocket fire doesn't cease very, very soon, then Hamas should be expecting a much more intensive response from Israel, and that this could ultimately lead to another operation in Gaza, something which the Egyptians are really doing whatever they can to try to prevent. So all in all, a lot of action, both with the Prime Minister and indeed overnight afterwards. The Prime Minister following that Ashdod event, went to the Kiryat in Tel Aviv. He met with senior military officials, and that's where they determined what the response would be overnight. And we've seen that already taking place overnight by the IDF in Gaza. But there were some speculations that Hamas knew that the prime minister would be appearing in Ashdod, because apparently this was an event that was advertised on Facebook, and that they purposefully targeted that location by sending rockets in order to, you know, attack the event that the prime minister was due to appear at. So that's another conspiracy theory that seems to be doing the rounds this morning. There are no confirmations or denials of that fact. And in fact, Hamas hasn't said anything about the fact that they were intending to target the prime minister's appearance. But it is certainly one of those theories that seems to be going around at the moment.
Yeah, it's and also one does wonder if everything yesterday was orchestrated. I'm finding myself more and more skeptical around the behavior and some of the comments of Netanyahu, even going there, making the comments that he did whilst he was there, then the Hamas attack. I don't know. It feels like very, very powerful marketing to me.
Howard, are you suggesting that Hamas are trying to help Netanyahu become re-elected?
Well, it would certainly seem that Netanyahu will do anything and talk to anybody and deal with anybody just to become re-elected. I mean,
I think that I suspect that going to co-opt the support of Hamas.
No, I don't think. Oh no, I don't.
Might be one
I think,
step too far.
No, I don't think he would ever do that. But I do think it could be opportunistic if it gets known, if it is known to them that he is going to be speaking there, and you know, Israeli intelligence is not without its information. They might well have known that something could have. It's a conspiracy theory, of course. But if you add the fact that that he made that announcement about the annexation of the Jordan Valley yesterday, given the fact that he's been in power for 13 years and hasn't done so, but yet a week before the election is making these announcements, I worry about his level of desperation, in truth.
Well, it's interesting because I was just saying to friends yesterday that even though the election is now less than a week away, the election will be next week on Tuesday, we still are not hearing any substantive election issues being spoken about in the public. We're not seeing them being advertised, you know, in the newspapers. We're not seeing any discourse about issues that are affecting this country that should be relevant to an election. We're not talking about the economy. We're not talking about education. We're not talking about healthcare. We're not talking about security. We're not talking about any of these issues which one would expect would be fundamental before a week before an election. And we're talking about whether there are going to be cameras in the polling booths, and we're going to be talking, you know, these are the things that we're talking about. And there's such a lack of interest in the substantive issues that should really be governing an election. I think that, you know, the country is definitely election weary. And interestingly, this morning, the latest polls suggest that the Likud is likely to get as many seats, or maybe even one seat fewer, than the Kahol Lavan grouping of Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid. The latest opinion polls are saying that Kahol Lavan will get 32 seats, that Likud will win 31 seats, and that the so-called right-wing grouping in the Knesset, when you add up all the seats of those parties that are likely to want to form a coalition with Prime Minister Netanyahu, comes to 57 seats, according to the latest opinion polls. That is not a government. It's not even really near a government. I mean, obviously, 61 seats are required to form a government, and a 61-seat government is hardly a government that can operate. It's so tenuous in terms of the majority that it has. But 61 seats at least would be a government, which we haven't had for the past 6 months or so. At the moment, it is suggesting that the right-wing grouping, which is the largest of the groupings, despite the fact that Kahol Lavan is predicted to win more seats, they will get 57 seats. And interestingly, the Arab parties, which have now combined together to form a joint list, that joint list will be the third largest party in the Knesset, according to the current opinion polls.
Wow, wow, wow. Unbelievable. What's been the reaction, though, within Israel about this annexation comment?
So the annexation comment is really a very substantial comment. And you know, it seems to almost have been a throwaway line as part of the election campaign. But we really need to take it very, very seriously because let's bear in mind that the Jordan Valley, just to bring listeners up to speed, yesterday Prime Minister Netanyahu made a speech earlier in the day, not the Ashdod speech, the one that was held earlier in the day at Kfar Maccabiah, and he mentioned the fact that if the Likud is re-elected and takes government, that he plans to annex the Jordan Valley, or at least parts of the Jordan Valley. Now, what is the significance of that? What is the meaning of this to anybody? I mean, as you rightly pointed out, Israel has had control over the Jordan Valley since 1967, since the Six-Day War. So 40 or more years, 50 years have passed since the Jordan Valley came under Israel's control. It has not been annexed since then. Just for the record, the annexation, Israel's activities to annex territory have been limited so far to East Jerusalem, to annex it to become part of the United City of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and in the Golan Heights, where, you know, we've obviously seen in recent times as well the U.S. government recognizing Israeli sovereignty over that area. But as far as the so-called West Bank is concerned, the whole area that's on the west bank of the Jordan River, which includes, you know, the Palestinian Authority area, it includes Israeli settlements, so-called settlements. I'm using the terminology that's used generally in the press, which is obviously very, very loaded and has no particular significance from a political point of view, but I'm just using it in order for people to understand which are the areas that I'm talking about. Those Israeli settlements that have been established, you know, within that area, those are not on Israeli territory as such, even though Israel has authority over that area and has ceded some of that to the Palestinian Authority as part of the Oslo process. Israel has not actually annexed that. So Israeli law doesn't really apply there in the same way as it applies in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv or Netanya or other Israeli cities. There is an entirely different system of law and establishment which applies to those areas. Interestingly, the Jordan Valley, which Prime Minister Netanyahu was discussing yesterday and was threatening to annex if he was returned to power, is almost devoid of inhabitants. It's very, very sparsely populated, mostly Israelis living there rather than Arabs / Palestinians / whatever you wish to call non-Jewish people living in that area. So mostly Israelis, but even then not that many. And the most significant town area of population within that particular area is Jericho, which is not up for annexation. That wasn't included as part of the Prime Minister's comments. So really, we're talking about the annexation of a almost uninhabited area, which is very, very critical for Israeli security. And interestingly, late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, in his day, discussed the possibility of annexing this particular area of the Jordan Valley from a security point of view. So even from the left side of Israeli politics, there has been some sympathy to the idea of annexing this piece of the Jordan Valley. But I think that the reason that the Prime Minister mentioned it yesterday comes really from two places. Place number one is he feels the wind behind his back from the U.S. administration. He feels that he will get the support from the U.S. administration, and actually mentioned that in his speech yesterday, saying that, you know, he has the support from the U.S. administration. There seems no doubt that he's been discussing this fact with the U.S. Government, probably at his meeting in London last week with U.S. government officials. It seems as if though the U.S. is very supportive of the idea of that part of the Jordan Valley becoming part of Israel proper. That's number one. I think number two is that the Prime Minister is also looking to try to cement as much as possible the right-wing vote for next week's election. Commission. And of course, this particular statement about the idea of annexing any of this territory, even if it might well be sparsely populated and not that significant in the in terms of population, will go down well with the right-wing community in Israel. And they see that as a possible first step towards annexing other areas of the West Bank, and most probably, most likely from their point of view, settlements where Jews are living at the moment, be they Gush Etzion or Maale Adumim or Ariel or any of those areas where there are significant numbers of Jews living. I think the right wing have sort of considered the idea of the annexation of the Jordan Valley to be the first step towards something more significant. So that's the way that I'm reading it at the moment. But it certainly is a significant point. And it would be very, very interesting to see whether this is just a statement to get people to support him in the election and then it gets left at that point, or whether in fact this does get progressed in the event that Prime Minister Netanyahu is returned to power.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely fascinating. And it will be interesting to see what the impact of this is. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for a fascinating Israel report. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow. Here's your news with Zanati.